cool. Angel in Disguise. Love her voice. Got a great song, man. She's got great stuff going. That was, by the way, Denise Vasquez from her album Frame of Mind. And you guys can all check her out at her site, www.cdbaby.com/Denise V3, and you can pick up her CD. Or if you got MySpace, myspace.com/Denise Vasquez, DeniseVasquez. And by the way, this is Andrew Fetter hosting When Pigs Fly, live from Las Vegas, Nevada. And it seems to be cooling down. I was in L.A. just a little while ago, last weekend, and that was a lot cooler. It was a good brief. And I have a special guest coming on. And by the way, I just want to let everybody know, if you ever you come out in Las Vegas and need a good healing and get some, crystal adjustments and whatnot, and a great master as far as healing and utilizing Reiki and crystals, you should stop by and see Sun. And if you ever want to check out, if you don't know what Reiki is, or you would like to contact her, I know she's going to be teaching classes very soon, and she's also forming Reiki circles. And you can check out her website at www.epichealing.com. And her phone number, you can always call her too, 702-405-8912. And I'm telling you, she's unbelievable. I'm telling you, that's all I can tell you. Now, folks, I got a very special guest, like I said. Her name is Zandra Gravier. She had written a book called Angel in Disguise, and it was regarding her her situation. Her daughter had passed away, and the follow-up and the aftermath right after it, and how she reconnected utilizing automatic writing with her daughter. And Zandra, you still there?
I'm here. Hi.
How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
No problem. I have to say to you, I want to say I'm very sorry for the passing of your daughter. I have a very close friend who also had lost her son a couple of years ago in a major accident, actually in front of her. She got hit by a drunk driver, hit her and her son on bikes. So I can feel for you, and I empathize with what you had gone through. And reading that almost made me rent tears, because it was like hearing her story. Now I'm hearing your story, and it was like, oh, my God.
Oh, so, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Yeah. As I was reading your book, and you got a little clip of some of your background, can you tell us elaborate a little bit about your background so people listening in, and by the way, everybody listening, thank you for listening to my show and to future archives. Tell us a little bit about yourself so people can just know where you come from, and you know that you're not no Paris Hilton or, you know, you or whatever, because that's what it seemed like. You're just trying to show who you are, just like everybody else, and then this could happen to anybody else, it seems like. So could you elaborate about yourself?
Okay, well, I lived my whole life in Utah. I just moved to Las Vegas about 4 years ago. And, in fact, the accident with my daughter happened in Utah. I was working for the airlines at the time. And also, wasn't really a psychic reader or anything like that at the time. I just had learned about automatic writing, and my daughter knew that I could do that before she died, and she always liked me to do it. And so after she died, I knew about it, and I was in so much grief that I just thought, I got to figure this out, and so I just started writing. And then in 2 weeks, I wrote the book, because it just came so quickly for me. Because I was using automatic writing, so.
It seems that you're very religious. And are you affiliated with any organized religion, or what's your religious background, or if you were or are or now or then, what's your religious background?
Well, I'm from Utah, so, but I don't think I was ever really religious. You know, I always tried to be close to God, but I don't think I was religious. and you know, I did go to church a little bit, but I was a Mormon for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really now. I kind of believe a little bit differently now, but I still am close to God, and that's kind of what's helped me through all of this.
That's great. That's like the most important thing. I mean, there's an old Hebrew expression, and in fact, in Hebrew, the word ish or isha in man. If you pull out, there's actually two initials. If you pull the two letters that represent God out of each person, it turns the word ish or isha, the man, you turn him into being angry.
Being what?
Being angry. If you take, it literally means if you pull God out of man, you become angry.
Which
is pretty, I thought, pretty interesting. But
yeah.
That's interesting. Because I was really curious, because when I was reading your book, it seemed like you were very conscious that you had a very deep connection in your perspective of God, and which I respect. I'm not Christian or anything, but I respect your beliefs. But I was relating to how you were going into your situation. And then it was really interesting, I thought, in your book, because I know of utilizing automatic writing, actually, because I've done that. Actually, when I actually write my books, it's almost like actually automatic writing in a way, because I actually visualize watching a movie and just boom, there it is.
Right. Yeah.
I can really connect how you were doing that. But I almost felt when I was reading your book, it was like your daughter became your guide in a sense. And I don't know if you relate to guides or a guide energy.
Oh,
so that's what it was.
That's more what I believe in now.
Huh?
I more believe that way now. I mean, I still believe in God, the universe, the same. You know, I don't know how I see the whole thing, but I think it's all the same.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
And then there's like basically like guys that come in. Like it seemed like, because it's sort of funny that you had your daughter came within your book, became your guide, and I almost feel like there was like a karma. I don't know if you believe in reincarnation, but I believe people, sometimes there's a karmic events between two people, and like I believe that you and your daughter actually may have been in reverse in past lives, that she was your mom and you're the daughter. But
exactly. I believe that too, so.
Yeah. But it was another thing.
Go ahead.
There was another thing that really caught me when I read it, because this is related, because I lost my father back in 86, and then I went through some serious things, and then somebody who was acting, who was one of my teachers, manifested, tried to create guide energy toward me, and he was trying to bring my father back into the picture.
Uh-huh.
And ironically, it was as he was trying to bring my father in, it actually brought from three different fathers from my past lives.
Oh, wow.
So when I read that, I was like, whoa. And I'm telling everybody, you got to read this book. It's written very in a form that it is very easy read, and anybody can relate to, almost like it would be you have written it. So, but also I noticed another thing, and I'm sorry I'm getting on here, but there's so much stuff in your book that it seemed like you touched a lot of layers, and I know that when you, I asked you to send me a couple of questions, there's a lot of deeper layers that go through your book that I don't even think maybe you will realize or didn't realize, but and one of which is I noticed that almost like it was like a mirror, like you were dealing with your own issues and facing your own fears as you're writing your own book. It was almost like an exercise.
Well, it definitely was self-healing. I mean, you know, to look at everything in a different picture, a different light. And it was really healing on everything in life for me, not just for death, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I know, like, some of the... What were you... I know I don't elaborate too much on your fears. Got somebody's blowing their lawn outside. I'm walking around the room trying to avoid that sound. But there's like, what fears did you feel that you like? I mean, like almost like insecurities or something that it almost came a threshold up to your before your daughter was passed away, and then after, it seemed like there was a metamorphosis that changed, that now here you are, and you're faced with them. What fears were they that you had to deal with?
Well, I think a lot of fears of, like, I'm really a shy person, so putting my book out there in a big way and my innermost feelings and all the things that have happened to me, and then I put it out in a big way. It's taken me a long time to let go of that, you know, and put it out there because I was afraid to be exposed for how I felt, I guess, and, you know, those inner feelings that you read in the book. And the big picture makes sense when I, you know, after you read it, but I was really afraid to put myself out there with all the things that have happened to me. Sometimes you get embarrassed of your past if you weren't because of it, you know.
Basically, like showing who, exposing who you are and what. It's almost like the greatest fear everybody says is speaking out in public.
Oh, you know? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but you know, I know it's, and I spoke about this in one of my past shows about fears and illusion, and I think that what things that we go and what you did is a great process of going through it. And you don't necessarily have to do after some catastrophic event happen, like, you know, or a major thing, like you having somebody die in your family or something like that. But that situation that you exercise of using automatic writing to connect with your guys, or even just facing your fears, is one great methodology, and overcoming them, realizing they're just basically illusions. You know, that's what I thought was really tremendous within your book. I also noticed there was a change of your dynamic as far as your self-confidence, your self-worth was like over-changing. Like there was a diminished self-worth of yourself within the book in the very beginning. And then as it started progressing, like almost like onion layers were being removed, and you're, you know, stepping up further and further up forward within your book, and basically transgressing into, you know, trying, going, hey, here I am. I'm good. You know, I'm not. And it seemed like, and then you were getting reinforced by your daughter as your guy telling you, Mom, you're okay. Everything was fine, you know, and here you're like, and it was very fascinating. Could you elaborate maybe about that situation? Because a lot of people have problems of methodology and overcoming that situation where they feel their lack of self-worth or lack of self-worthiness. And could you elaborate about that? Because that was pretty fascinating how you layer by layer overcame that.
And it's so fascinating to me, even, because in the book, that was happening, and I knew the steps to take because of writing the book, because I feel like my whole life I have had really low self-worth from abuse issues and different things that I've had in my life. And so every time as I'm looking at a big picture, as I was healing it, I would let go of that part that was beating me down or in my mind. And, you know, and I still, you know, do that today. That process of knowing your feelings and looking at the situation and feeling that pain that you had to go through and really letting go of it. Because in my life, I held it all inside my whole life. And so I just walked around, like, afraid of life, I think. Really afraid to feel, to live, to experience life, because I felt so inferior. And then in the book, it was like, it was showing me that let it go, it's okay, and these are lessons you needed to learn for this reason or that reason, and it just made me stronger. And still today, I keep getting stronger and stronger all the time by doing this kind of processing.
And so you still do automatic writing?
I do automatic writing, yeah.
Are you planning to do a sequel to this, your book?
I know everyone keeps telling me, you've got to write another one, you've got to write another one. And the way it happened, it came so quickly, and I know when it's time I will. I know I'm going to write again because I'm going through another big process right now. And it's just, it all comes at once, and it comes. It's like when you get to that point inside yourself, I don't know what they call it, but it just all comes at once because it's such heart, you know, your heart's wide open, and it just flows out of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it will come when it comes, and, you know, and I know it'll come. I just haven't. It's not like I sit down and write every day preparing myself for it, because it all comes at once when I do it, this kind of writing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you do any kind of meditation, or how do you get yourself? Because I know a lot of people who are listening in, they go, okay, bottom of my groin, I sit in front of my computer, I get a pen or whatever. Well, now nobody writes on pad and pen anymore. But what would be a process, like, from your point to, you know, to, like, somebody on the street, like, maybe has no idea about any methods of automatic writing, and who have not really been exposed to any, like, spiritual or guidance or whatever as far as automatic writing. What would be your process if you were going, okay, John or Sue, this is how you would do about automatic writing? How would you go through that process?
Okay, well, I definitely meditate every day before, when I'm really in the deep process. I'm meditating, you know, for a long period of time right before when I start writing. And breathe, and I pray, because I always want to be guided by the light. And I just meditate. Breathing in and out, breath is really important. And then I get clear, and then I write. And now, today, it's funny that you said that, because when I first wrote it, though, I did handwrite most of it and then put it on the computer. The last six chapters, I just sat down on the computer and wrote that in 4 hours, but I didn't use it, because there, if you notice in the book, some of it happened to me a few years ago. The last six chapters happened to me in the last few years, so they were written a little bit separately. So like the first part of the book I wrote in 2 weeks, and then the last six chapters I wrote in like 4 hours. But it was the same thing. The last time I didn't do it by hand. I don't know why. At first, that's just how it flowed better for me. But now I can do it on the computer where it just flows just as easily.
Like it just as easily. But when you meditate, what kind of state? I mean, because everybody says, okay, well, what's meditation? You know, what do you do? Everybody has their different methods of getting into that state. What methods would you say you, when you meditate, like what kind of frame of thought do you get into when you're meditating before you actually, because that's the key thing, I think. People, you know, say, okay, you got to meditate. Okay, well, let's meditate. You know, what little thing do you get to? Where's your thought process, and where are you in so many words before you get into that certain state that you can start automatic writing?
Well, I pray first, and then I breathe in and out and just clear my mind, and like I bring in love, universal love, and then I just release universal love into the universe. And I kind of use that thought frame of, you know, using love in and out. And then you're clearing your mind of all the other stuff. And I just bring in love and send love out. Bring in love and send love out until I feel like I'm ready. And I just keep doing it until I'm ready.
Because it's interesting because you bring that. The reason why I was asking, because I have in one of my other shows I brought in about thoughts or things. And I think the major crux is people, if you clear out all your thoughts, which is basically what you did, clear everything out. Mm-hmm. And then you start from, and you get that universal feeling, which is what you're connecting, which in Hebrew is called, in the Kabbalistical sense, they say it's the I hate to say the word, but they call it, it's literally called the intercourse between God and soul. It's that loving feeling. So when that connectedness comes, all of a sudden from the non-thought or even Taoism, they say at the Tao, the empty bowl, then all of a sudden all the things that flow in, is what you start, your connectedness. And it seems like that's what you basically did in your methodology, which is pretty cool. And like everybody out there who's listening, you know, you don't have to be a Maharishi or, you know, a master. There's everybody has that ability, and nobody's less. There's no ranking, so to speak, to do what you do. And because it's everybody has it. It's like nobody's better, nobody's more psychic, nobody's this. It's just, you know, everybody has that ability to reconnect. And in fact, I think that's the whole game plan. I think that's what even though I'm not a Christian in the sense that I don't believe in Jesus being the Messiah, but I think he was a great teacher. And one of the greatest things he kept on saying is, it's in your heart, you know, it's always within you. And if you don't have it, you'll surely die, which is from the Book of Thomas. And that's basically your connectiveness. It's not outside. You just have to, everybody can connect. You don't need a church or a synagogue or a mosque or somebody outside to get that connectiveness. You can all do it and then do exactly what you did, and then connecting, utilizing automatic writing, which is one of the greatest forms of connecting to guide energy or the universe, because it's just at your higher soul and your low, and your soul is connecting to all things around you. And it was just phenomenal. It was really fascinating. That's what I'm curious. I'd like to see what your next book would be, because it would be that, you know, you went through one metamorphosis, and now, you know, what state, where you are now at the next time. So,
yeah. Well, I know what it's about, because I think you make a great point. Everyone can do it. I mean, and because I'm not this enlightened being, I don't see, you know. But right now, I feel like I'm going through a really greater part of enlightenment, and I think I'm going through what's called the refiner's fire. I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you heard of that term before?
The what?
The refiner's fire.
No, I haven't ever heard that.
And it's like it's bringing in a higher vibration than before, and just because I've gone through another series of things in my life and growth, and so, but I'm going through a really big thing right now, and I have to get myself in that state of mind to go through it, which is, you know, I'm even on a fast right now because, and, you know, I know a lot of people don't fast, but it takes you closer to your spirit, your body, with that thing that you said about the intercourse with, how'd you say that? Because that's exactly probably what I'm going through right now, again.
Okay, that's from I don't know if you're familiar with Kabbalism or in Zohar. It's actually the mysticism within Judaism. It's the crux of you've probably heard Madonna stuff and all them talking about,
right.
Which is the very tip of the iceberg. I went into some of it in my last show about Kabbalism, but it's the very essence is they say what it says like in the Aura of Light that basically the male stuff the human soul is basically the phantom inside of man, of the universe of God. And the universe outside is the masculine. That's why in Hebrew they use two genders of God, feminine and male. And when they combine, and that's what they mean when you become, in Hebrew they say viyachad as one, God is one, is actually you're becoming together with God. It's called a spiritual intercourse. That's what it literally says in the Zohar. You have a spiritual intercourse, and when you have that, you get this, okay, here we go again, sexual. But it actually literally says it's like the orgasm of your spirit, because you have that vibration, has all of a sudden your vibration frequency goes further higher. So you've actually elevated your soul. And each time you connect, your vibration goes further and further, and your soul level goes further up as far as on a level of frequency. And then as it gets further and further, and you do, you're supposed to do it in your every lifetime. You're supposed to try to get better. This is in Judaism. Actually, there is a reincarnation. So when you come back and you finish your karmic events and you keep on redoing them over and over and elevating your soul, that's how you can become further and move up the ladder. And that's also why it elaborates, and I don't regress on stuff I've talked before in past shows, because this is about your book, but in Genesis, this is what they talk about when they say, like, man had the created his choice by having, you know, the opportunity to choose, and therefore that wasn't a bad thing that he ate the apple. It was actually a good thing, because now he had the ability actually on a vibrational thing that we can actually go further higher as a soul level than the even angels, because angels don't have choice, they just do. So that was what made us so separate. So by your choosing to increase your vibration, to walk toward the light, gives the opportunity to another situation, which is another thing is really interesting. That the reason why I was asking about your next book is because since you're doing automatic writing, as your levels change and you're increasing your vibrations, your thoughts, which are things, again, change in your going into new thought patterns, and therefore the new information comes in and it keeps on going further and further up the ladder. So, and it's not information that you don't know. It's basically you're reminded of information that you've already known. I don't know how to explain that further, but it's like a remembering. But But basically, that's why I find it so fascinating that by what you've done, because you know you're like the start of the iceberg, and now you've broken up, and be curious to see how many further books that you do down the line of automatic writing, almost like there's a lot of the famous writings from famous spiritual leaders have been through basically automatic writing, and then they may have put it down. It comes off prophecy, but basically it has been automatic writing. So that's why I'm just curious.
Well, I think you make it so interesting because I didn't hear your show, and honestly, I know that my vibration is changing right now because what you're saying is exactly right. And who knows what the next book's going to be like because I'm not quite to that place. But I am to that place where I'm going through this whole vibrational shift. And I kind of even, I did fasting a week or two ago, and I'm going to do it for a longer time this time because I got a taste of what you're saying. I mean, I felt the energy come into my body and change the vibrational level when I did it for one day. So I know that I have to do it for a longer period of time, and then I think I might be ready to write the next book. I'm not sure. But something huge is shifting, and that's good. But I know that's the process I'm hitting, and it's without having all the knowledge that you're telling me right now, I just felt that I needed to do it. I just was so guided that you need to fast, you need to do this, you need to take this one step higher, so you're more in tune.
And more connected. It
more
opens
connected.
Up more doors and more connected energy of thoughts and processes and healing, and basically you put down basically like I think the most important thing that a lot of people tend to forget too is one reason why we get into this embodiment is basically feel ourselves. And I know a lot of people run out and it's cool to help other people, but if you don't help yourself and you become a basically dysfunctional nut and
right.
And you're running around helping. You're covering up the real problem. And what I feel what you did is really cool because you're helping yourself, but at the same time, at the same opportunity by putting out your book, you're helping other people. So it's like almost a dual purpose. That's why I think it was really cool that you did automatic writing that is helping you, but it's also helping other people at the same time. What I want to ask you now is how you would accept how did you come to being to accept what was happening during your process through your writing as you were writing this book?
I guess I'm confused with the question. What do you mean? How the writing part? How did I accept that? What do you mean?
Okay, well, I was wondering how you accept what happened through your writing. How would you accept, when you did your writing, how did you accept it, what happened? I mean, how did you come to terms?
With, like, the loss of Brooke and stuff?
Huh? Yeah, how you come, with the situation with your daughter passing, and then what happened, because it seemed like that was really a crux, like it was almost something that burst within your book.
Right.
Like, how did you come to acceptance through the process of while you're writing? What made you? Where was it? Was there a defined moment, or just a gradual? What was it that made you? Because people come into terms when you ever talk about accepting somebody who passed away, and everybody who has had somebody pass away close to them, there's that mourning stage. You know, some people go through gradual, a year, 5 minutes, 2 minutes. And there's that feeling of coming to terms of it, in terms of accepting it, and then yours was actually the process. So I was just curious what happened. Was there any specific stage where you came to, okay, she passed away, now I got to move on, or was it just sort of gradual, or what was it?
Well, I mean, I was in probably that crazy state of mind. You know, I was in grief for about a year. I was just in such grief. And I had done the automatic writing, of course, before she died. And then I just couldn't take. My heart was just ripped wide open. And I just thought, I can't stay in this state of mind. I know there's an answer that's going to help me. And so I just said, I'm writing a book. And I sat down. And I started praying and meditating. And then that's like I said, and it just came out. And every step through the book was healing for me because it just took a little bit of the pain away. And I mean, when I can see it in this beautiful big picture, because life can be that way, even hard things can be a beautiful big picture, it made it so much easier to look at all these miraculous events that were happening around me at the same time as I'm losing my daughter. You know, miraculous.
Right, yeah, because I thought, like, everybody, when you read the book, you'll see all the connectedness between the loved ones around you, the support you're getting, you know, the little things that you wouldn't even you'd be surprised. You know, people maybe you don't even really deal with, and out of nowhere seem to reconnect, you know, people. It's sort of funny how when people passed away that people started to come together and, you know, and it puts things more into a reality. We too much... we look at tombs. It seems like, I don't know, I remember when I had my spiritual mom pass away way back in 95, and she knew she was about to die. She had cancer, and it was a slow process. And I remember the day before she passed away, because she was sitting at her bedside, and she was telling me how everybody's worried about, you know, how much toys they have, or how much money, or their day-to-day problems at work, or... you know, this guy cut me off, that girl this did that, those are so minuscule, those aren't even really important, and it seems the most important thing was love, you know, and that's what I felt that you were exuding from your book. I think it was fantastic. Again, everybody have to get it out. It's Angel in Disguise, and I'll give you, and I'm going to rehash it so you know where to get it. You can go to www.lightworker.com. Also, I want to ask you about how connecting to the souls of your children. You know, because I asked you a series of questions that you thought of. And it's sort of weird that I did this, because I remember saying, you know, when I was doing interviews and people go, what, me give you questions? Aren't you supposed to answer questions? But a lot of times when people give you questions, it gives you a reflection of what the thing in the book, and it's sort of funny with that. So I was just curious, and then I realized, God, this is really interesting questions you had laid out. And one of them was how connecting to the souls of your children can help them. So are you talking of souls that have passed away or souls that are living? Because obviously they're living, you talk to your kids. So I assume that you're relating to, you know, parents that have lost their loved ones, their kids, which is probably, I got to say, is the hardest thing. I mean, everybody expects their parents or grandparents to pass away, but it's really difficult to see... I can't even fathom it, because it hasn't, God forbid, ever happened to me, but I've been around it from living in Israel and seeing wars and people, young people die around me, you know, and seeing the faces on the parents and what they're going through. So is how, again, connecting to the souls of your children help them?
Well, it's because I believe that you can also connect to the souls of your children here. And even though, I mean, when they pass, I mean, we have this energy bond that's connected. We are part of each other, especially our children, you know. And, you know, our parents and our children, we are connected. That bond is always there, you know, in the energy world, too. And so with other parents who lose children, just because they're gone, that connection still exists. And so if you are tuned in, you can feel them and hear them and, you know, talk to them. But here on this planet, you know, we're connected with the same energy bond, so why don't we use it? I do it with my children, you know. I send them thoughts, send them energy, prayers, and that, and they get them, you know, and it helps, like, guide them. Sometimes, you know, you're worried about your kids, they're in trouble or whatever. We have that bond. Our minds are connected and we're through that energy, and so I do that connection to keep my sons on track, too. You know, I mean, does that seem odd?
Wow.
Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. No, let me also ask you, how did you get to this place to open up with the messages? Where was it that you, I know I'm sorry, elaborating, but rehashing, but how did you get to the place of finally opening up to, I know you said you did automatic messages, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's one thing to, like, how did you get into that specific time that you had to go and do it? I know you said you did meditating and all that. But how is it that you got in the place to open up with these messages? You know, I mean, where was it that you got the automatic? Did you, as you were hearing your writing, because it seems like you're automatic writing, but do you hear it coming through you from your daughter talking to you, or did it just come out onto your hand and you just like blindly?
Sometimes a little of both. A lot of times, though, I find it just came out blindly. I just typed. And I was typed and typed and typed, or I wrote and wrote and wrote, and it just came through my hands, really. You know, I would initially start, as you know, like a question, and then all of a sudden I just type and type and type and type and type, and then I'd look back and go, wow. And it was shocking what I had written, you know, because it was so amazing, some of the stuff, the messages I got. So it really was just through me, a little bit of hearing, but I would say more it's just through my hands, and I just start writing, and it just came, all of it.
Hmm.
You know, wow. And I know that I've heard that a lot with, that it's a form of, it's channeling, of course, but that people who like write books, that's a form of channeling, like you said, I've heard that a lot, and like musicians, and just this form of being really connected, and it flows through us and to us what we should, you know, do like that.
Fascinating. And also, I know, and this is sort of like everybody says, how is love the answer to everything? How would you put it that, you know, it sounds so kumbaya, as some people would say, of what is love, but how would you put to the effect that, you know, how would it, in your terms, would your, from your doing what you went through your process with your book and your automatic writing, how would you, if somebody says, okay, fine, how does love equate to everything? I mean, basically, why is it love always the answer? I mean, everybody says that, but can you tell me how you feel? How would that really be? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I believe that the love is the creation energy that can make things happen. But also, it's like if you can take every single relationship, and I've been doing this other thing called Visions. It's called Visions. They do it here in Las Vegas once a month, and it's a seminar that's just amazing. But and it's about bringing more love to this planet, okay? And taking every relationship back to love, even those ones that, you know, I think, you know, in the Enema book I wrote about my ex being my biggest enemy or whatever, but also sometimes those people can be your biggest teacher because you have to learn to forgive them and go to love and find that part in every single person on this planet that is love. And so taking your heart to love is opening your heart, making energy flow freely through you. Because if you don't have love, it's like what you said, that Jesus said, if you don't have it in your heart, nothing will flow. It's the energy of God, to me, the universe, and things flow freely, but it's blocked by anger and resentments, and if you shut your heart down, and you can't create in life when you're blocked like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I believe love is the answer. And, you know, every single relationship we have to take back to love so that we can flow freely and live the life that we are trying to live. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That makes exactly. I mean, basically, that's it. I mean, basically, I wish everybody was understood that, but that's, you hit like on the nose. I mean, everybody has to realize it's just the love. I mean, it sounds so, you know, kumbaya, but really isn't. It's that energy. That's what we're here for. And if I think, you know, having your self-worth is part of that love, developing your self-love is that love, loving the person and without, you know, I mean, you allowed your enemies or people who you look at your, because they always say, in Tao Te Ching, they say, in Taoism, they say, your enemy is your shadow of your own self. And what is that? It's basically, your dark side is a reflection of you. It's your greatest teacher, which is also says that your enemy is your greatest teacher. So, and it's rarely how you react to it. You know, everybody, you know, we have little karmic events that happen, you know, it seems like, and every time we come to them, people go, "Whoa, why did this happen to me? Oh, my God, you know, why would this?" And they don't like to hear it, but in an existential way, it really is. It was probably a lot of, it could be both, it could be karma, it could be out of choice. And then when I talk choice, it's out of, you know, our higher selves, because basically I believe we choose our own lives. But there are certain karmic events that happen. Yeah. And it's, everything is sort of like, in a way, a lesson. It's an opportunity to grow. And as bad and as hard as situations can be, in fact, as hard as it is to lose a child, I know this sounds really weird, because I know every time I say that, people go, "Oh, my God, don't tell me that crap," you know? But it really is. I mean, as hard as a situation is losing your child, it is an opportunity to add your reaction, either to do something negative or do something positive, go through something in a light form. Like, for example, you had done, Sandra, when you wrote a book and you did it through automatic writing and you connected with your spirituality, or you can do on the negative side and hate the world,
right,
and do something and let that anger build up and create something else. So I think all things have choices, and that's where we give our opportunity to grow. And usually I also feel that when people have these catastrophic events, these karmic events, these very unbelievably hard events, usually it's set for people. And again, I'm not trying to equate any ranking of scale or spirituality, but usually it's certain souls have chosen a level to an opportunity to extremely grow spiritually. Like without certain hardships, if you didn't have any hardships at all, you wouldn't have any challenges, therefore you would just be sitting there, you know.
Yeah.
We don't grow from successes, we actually grow from failures, and those failures really aren't failures, they're challenges, there's things of overcoming. And that's where I think people, I think it was really important, because in your book, here's a mother losing a daughter, and, you know, like I said, people don't like to put band-aids over it. They'll push it aside, they stick it down. They might go home and suck down a beer or drink or smoke that bong, and all they're pushing down with those feelings and all those issues are still there. They're just pushing it down for a later date. And so your automatic writing, which is a great way of actually allowing a process of and reconnecting even with your own daughter as your spiritual guide, and some of you may not necessarily connect with their own daughter, but might some connect in a different way, but it was a great way of elevating your spirituality, and you've taken that choice. And everybody can always change. You know, even if you smoked that bong or drink that beer and you're in grief, and you know, I don't blame it, because I'm not in their shoes, so I can't say judge for people who have made those choices. But you can always change. You can always change that choice you just made and go, you know what, I want to make something positive out of it. And that's why I think that was really a greatness what you did, because that showed, of all things, like the hardships. You know, and to this day, you know, I mean, like I said, when I lived in Israel, I mean, you'd be surprised. I was in Lebanon during the war, and I saw little kids running with RPGs, and I was always wondering, and they're 10 years old, 9 years old, and I'm always wondering, what the hell were kids, what were their parents thinking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was always wondering what their thinking process of allowing their kids to become killed. Even today, you know, you hear about suicide bombings and their relationship. Where is that mentality? Where is that thought process? And here, you're putting a thought process of some great love, and, you know, you cherish, you know, value your life of your kids. Well, in some areas around the world, as people hear, you're like, what? I don't get it, you know, which people who are walking toward the dark, don't get it, and people who are walking toward the light do. And this is what really hard for a lot of people who don't understand, like, situations in the Middle East, don't understand that there are definitely people who don't value their souls over their kids and really don't have any appreciation for life. And it's a lot of it has to do with their lack of self-esteem, lack of self-worth, and their projection of fear and hate by others toward them to make them think this way. And they also allow themselves to do that. So I think that was really substantial, like what I said, what you have done in your book. And, you know, and there's also one other thing I want to ask you is, I know this is one of the things that you've asked, but I was thinking of it myself anyway. How would you feel this book would open people's hearts to a greater understanding of life? And in the same sense, that's like question one. Question two, which is sort of the same thing, how would you feel that, what would be the biggest gift in writing the book that has given to you? So it's like twofold question. What would your book be the gift to the world, is in a sense, and what would the gift from your book give to you?
Okay. Well, definitely from the world. I think when you read the book, it's like it opens your heart. It's like an experiential book because I promise you, when I was writing it, there were tears coming down my face as I was experiencing the whole process myself. Mm-hmm. And I've had many people say to me, I had to stop reading for a minute because I had to cry, which is okay. I mean, I'm sorry. They are experiencing my pain and opening their heart through that process. But they're also seeing that no matter what it is in our lives, I mean, my biggest fear, of course, anyone's, is to lose their child. And when you walk through that, you can walk through anything, especially when you look at the miracles that were created around me and then just the lessons I've learned. I mean, I believe that it was a karmic event, yes. I believe it was all set up. I was supposed to go through this for my own spiritual growth. That was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. And so, but it's a gift to the world because they don't have to walk in my shoes, but they can feel and open their eyes to seeing things in a different way, because I've had people say many times to me, tell me your story one more time so I can feel good about mine. Like they're going through something hard and they want me to tell it mine so they'll realize they're okay. So mm-hmm. You kind of do that in the book too, you know, because that's a big thing. And if you can look at the death of your child as a spiritual gift, you can pretty much look at anything as a spiritual gift. Because, you know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
Everything is. I mean, every lesson that we go through, losing your job, okay, a better one's on the other end. I mean, whatever you've got to go through, if you, instead of go home and get drunk and, oh my gosh, the world's kicking me again, well, no, instead, let me see, how is this going to be a bigger and better thing for me? And you really got to switch your thinking so that you can be happy even when trying events happen to you. You know, and I know I picked a lot of trying ones in my life, so... for some reason, you know.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. I mean, I basically believe that, I mean, what you've done in your own book, and God bless you for it, has, in, you know, is many other people who read it or hear about your book or even listen to this air, every little thing, almost like to say the old pebbles effect, that it may have help somebody else, and then that would help somebody else down the line. Like if somebody reads your book and it helps them out, then there's always a ripple effect. Every time you create a ripple of love and light, I think, even if you think it's small, it ends up adding more because people don't realize how much, you know, that was the old thing about that actor who's always connected to everybody else. God, I forget his name now. But it's almost like the same thing. You, like, somebody that you've who read your book, for example, or heard this, for example, or whatever, that little pebble has affected somebody else and helped them. And you don't know if that's helped them through maybe their relationship with their daughter or son or their friend or their girlfriend, boyfriend, lover, whatever, or their father or mother. And then there's that ripple effect from that. And it keeps on going. I mean... And that's, I think, was the greatest thing. I mean, that's really, you know, and that's basically the essence. I mean, that's why I felt like within your book, the most core issue is, you know, the love that expounded out of your book and how to achieve your self-worth and your self-confidence and exude that toward everything around you and how people reconnect toward you. And there's even the weirdest situations, you know. And I don't even, I, it's funny because I've never even asked you how your kids felt or your husband felt about your situation when you're going through the book. Because here you're writing about your relationship with your daughter and how your kids would react to that. Were they jealous, weirded out, or how, and your husband, and what was that situation?
Well, you know, I'm divorced now, but, and that's like my, part of my next book. I mean, I wrote a little bit in the book before, and that's the process that was supposed to happen too, but the kids have, this is going to sound really funny, but my kids have never read it. And I don't know if they were jealous or not. All I can say is, like, and that's a process that I'm working through right now, is, like, sometimes, you know, you go one step deeper. I am working on, like, did my heart shut down just a little bit to my children, and do I have to open, you know, because I'm so afraid of losing another child that, I, you know. And that would probably be in the second book, because that's another level of what we do when our heart's broken, and then we got to refine the love and make sure that it's all working right with your children, you know. I mean, my kids are really close to me. They're very close to me, don't get me wrong. But sometimes I think, was I, you know, was my heart more open back then, you know, a little bit. So I'm working on and have done some great work with opening my heart more to my boys so that they don't ever feel that way. You know, they didn't seem jealous at all, no. But, you know, I think there was a little part of me that was so afraid of losing another child that kind of didn't let myself be as connected.
Right, because you're afraid of losing something happen to that child as well.
Yeah.
Or something else will happen, or, you know, you don't want to... Is that what you're saying, or...
Yeah, well, and then I went through a really rough divorce and, you know, just all this stuff. So, it, like, it's funny because in our lifetime, I'm sure the book is, like, a great fact that my heart was wide open and I got these great channeled messages. The interesting part is that in life, though you can be at that great place, life can do some more stuff, and then we got to reopen our heart again, you know, and I went through some stuff. So, you know, I've had to, you have to continually work on it, I guess is what I'm saying, to not let your heart close, you know. Just because it's open once and wide open, you feel that love and all that, here I am today doing the same thing, reopening my heart, because a divorce can shut your heart down, you know?
Yeah.
And you can become negative or, you know, bad things.
Yeah,
happen.
Believe me, I've been through that.
Yeah.
I felt fair like a woman in scorn, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I really want to thank you for coming on my show. And again, everybody... Zandra Gravier's book is called Angel in Disguise, and I highly, highly recommend it. And it's very, it gives you the methodical what goes on as far as automatic writing. If everybody thought about utilizing that process, it's no rocket science. It's very, everyone can do it. It's one of the best ways spiritually of connecting to your other side. Because it's almost unconsciously, because then you don't have any barriers. And I really highly recommend, again, you can get it and access to it at www.lightworker.com. If you want, and I forgot to tell everybody, you can send me an email at flyingpigs@artlover.com, and I can further help you get access to that book, or if you want to contact directly to Zandroff with any questions, and I could easily forward to them to her. And also, while you're at it, I forgot to tell you, always check out my website, www.andrewfetter.com. And if you want to check out my book, When the Angels Have Risen, I'm going to have another book being released called The Heretic toward the end of this year. I'll let everybody know about that. And you can always connect, if you have MySpace, onto my MySpace account at MySpace/Andrew Fetter. Send me questions, messages, whatever, comments. And I also have my blog site, which you guys always check out. It has the usual elixir of politics, religion, spirituality, and, of course, I dedicate it to Kurt Vonnegut, so it has my sarcastic side as well of humanity. And again, Zandra, I'd like to thank you for coming on my show. It was fantastic having you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. And with that, I'm going to close with my friends from Down Under, the Masonic Temple, with their song Devil's Suitcase, which you can access. They still have their free album, and I heard it's going to be limited. www.mp3.com.au/Masonic Temple with Devil's Suitcase. God, I feel like vampires every time I hear that song. Thank you, and God bless you all.